But, you know, at least I didn't, like, walk away from it wanting to burn him down, which I think is a common reaction to a lot of my readings of economists. So, you know.
If only we could take our love of reading to a new level.
Well, I've always wanted to start a book club.
Book club!
For
masochists and other deviants.
Hello and welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, where we read and discuss all the genres and types of literature, regardless of our actual interest in them.
Every month, we read books from a new, randomly picked genre. Then on the podcast, we discuss our reading choices, experiences, opinions, appeal factors, and other related topics as friends and library workers.
In this episode number 174, it is time for us to discuss economics nonfiction.
Time has come.
Yeah, I was vaguely tempted to say there, if there is such a thing.
it's all fiction is what you're saying.
Yes. Thank you.
It's definitely not a science. I can say that for sure.
Yeah, we should introduce ourselves first, but I am intrigued. I do have a thought on this on this thread. But first, my name is Jam. I'm a librarian in Vancouver, British Columbia, which is located on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Stolo people.
My name is Matthew. I'm a librarian in Fort Collins, Colorado, USA.
And my name is Anna. I'm also a librarian in Fort Collins, Colorado, USA, the traditional and ancestral homelands of the Arapaho, Cheyenne, and Ute nations and peoples.
My name is Megan. I live and work on the unceded traditional territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabe, which is also known as the National Capital Region of Canada.
So, the book that I ended up reading... What's up?
Announcements.
Announcements, okay. So this episode, as with all of our episodes over the last few years, has a book list of titles in this genre by authors of color. So if you check the show notes of this episode or our website, bookclubforem.com, you will find a book list of economics nonfiction by Black, Indigenous, and people of color authors. And there's a lot of them. I think this is a 25-er. Yeah.
Nice.
Anything else to announce? You're usually the person who keeps track of announcements, so I'm looking at you, Matthew.
No.
Nope. Okay.
No Pokemon streams, no...
Yeah, right?
So the book that I ended up reading is very much... I'll get into it when we talk about what we read, but certainly sections of it, it's written by a philosopher. And I am intrigued how much of economics is just philosophy, and if we called it... economic philosophy, if the field would have a different reputation and you know, pay grade.
Yeah, that is literally the last part of my book, is just the author saying, yeah, it's really not a science, it's a philosophy, but economists don't want to admit to that because, like, then their pay grade and their power in the world would diminish, and really it's just like a theology.
My book called that out in economists as well. Like, we're not physics or chemistry, let's be honest. Like, the data that we rely on is subject to an enormous amount of potential bias and not paying attention to everything that's possible. This is hilarious.
More or less a science than library science.
Oh, I don't want to touch that.
I think that's fine. Let's move on.
They need to know math, probably.
Yeah, right? They have more statistical models, honestly, than we do. Though we do spend an awful lot of time in Excel for just, like, the work we do.
That is true.
A lot of Excel.
I think that's work life right now.
Yeah,
if you work
true.
In front of a screen, there is an Excel sheet somewhere. Background?
I've read Soccernomics, a book about economy and soccer. Has anyone taken any economy courses in school?
I had one in high school that I remember nothing of except for the classroom it is in, and then I think the person who sat behind me and to the left, because he tended to annoy me a lot.
That's more than I remember about my high school economics class.
I ended up in my economy class was merged with my English class, so the same teacher was teaching both. So
we're making faces right now.
Yes. And what I remember from that mostly is just I wrote a paper about, like, the economics of Nazi Italy. I will not pretend it was very good at all.
As every high school student does.
Yes.
You know, if I said as every high school does in Canada, half our audience would be like, do they?
We don't know.
Missed opportunity.
I took a consumer math class in high school, which I don't think it, yeah, not economics necessarily. We learned things like how to write a check and how to pay our taxes. And we did do a unit on like the stock market and investments. So that's as close as I got.
I saw a thing recently that was talking about how like that's a common excuse that people make, that they throw out the whole like their financial literacy is just abominable. If we only taught people how to be financially literate, they'd all be so much better with their money and all our problems would be fixed. And then the reality is like most high schools do these and a lot of people kind of learn this stuff pretty consistently or at a pretty similar level. And most people know the basic components. It's not the basic literacy that's the problem.
I actually think it's more of the issue is that much like my library management course I had to take as part of my master's degree, and let me tell you, 6 years later, still haven't managed anybody. The course, like a course about paying your taxes and using textbooks, is irrelevant to high school students, and so they don't pay attention and they forget everything. But I was going to say, I think where I have read more of this is with political science and politics, because there's so much overlap between like politics and economics.
Yeah, I think they feed into each other to a great extent. I wouldn't say I have a lot of background in economics, but I have to admit, like, my father-in-law is a professor of economics, so I get, like, some spillover from that. He doesn't talk to me about it. It's like it comes through my partner where he has all these various stories about what he says his father thinks. So, like, third hand. So that's always interesting. He always jokes that, like, some economics is based on two myths of like perfect knowledge and rational action by people, whereas we all know we're just emotional messes all of the time. And so like, it's a bit of a fairy tale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think I've really read any, certainly none of the main thinkers in economics that people bring up all the time, or labor or any of those. Like I just, yeah, I mean to read them, but I haven't really. I've read around some of these issues through more reading about like how is like, for instance, women's labor valued and parental labor valued and things like that, but not something like, you know, core into economics. I will say I did back in the day when it came out, read the Freakonomics book along with like everybody and their brother at that time. It's got to be one of the like most read economics books in like modern history. So I did read that. I tried to listen to The Age of Surveillance Capitalism as an audiobook earlier this year, but it's so long. It's just one of those things, like such a big book. It's so long. And I'm just like, I'm interested in this topic, but I just can't stick around for quite this long. I'm sorry.
I can't find the title of the book that I was trying to look up, but yeah, I also have read like a book on the gender wage gap, which is probably in terms of like stuff that I read for my own interest, is as close as I've come to reading an economics book.
I'll also mention the Milton Friedman versus F.A. Hayek rap battle on YouTube, which I think is, you know, really good. Complete and utter explanation of that, and you don't need to read anything else to understand both of those you know, well-known economists' positions on every aspect of the economy. Clip goes here.
We've been going back and forth for a century. I want to steer markets. I want them set free. There's a boom and bust cycle and good reason to fear it. Play low interest rates.
It's the animal spirits.
Great.
So we haven't read this before. How did we look for books?
I asked a bunch of people to tell me, to recommend to me books because they apparently like to read economics. And then because they did not like physically bring me the books, I just found some books at the library instead.
Clearly, Megan, you need new friends who will physically bring you books.
Clearly.
Not us. We won't do it.
Not a bit too long. But I have mailed Megan a book. I did a subject search in the library catalog and then really truly just looked for things that were like introduction or the very short series or I ended up picking something that's under 100 pages. I was going to read the very short series introduction to Marxism. But Matthew was here when this happened. I picked it up and like opened it to read it and went, Peter Singer wrote this? I hate Peter Singer. Tossed the bag in my bag and returned it to the library, which I just, it was just fun to me because it's like, so Peter Singer is a philosopher and there's not that many philosophers like that I know well enough to hate. So I also don't know why they gave him the guide to Marxism. Like that's not his area of expertise. He's a, mostly like ethics, animal rights, philosopher who has said a bunch of really dehumanizing, made a bunch of really dehumanizing metaphors and said really dehumanizing things about disabled people, which I mention also so I can link to an article about it.
I looked up a bunch of lists about like best or most essential economics books. There's a lot of them out there that are like, so you want to be an economist, you wonderful little undergrad you. Here's what you should read. And then they're just lists of such junk. Like there's so many of them that are just pop sci books that are like already like heavily debunked pop sci junk. It's very weird.
Is this where we mentioned if books could kill?
Could be, yeah.
Because didn't they do, they've done a couple about things that could be considered economics.
Yeah, like Rich Dad, Poor Dad, they just did.
Yeah, and there's another one too, but I can't remember what it was.
Yeah.
And well, speaking of junk and things that we don't understand, I was just looking up something on Wikipedia and was like, it's like, oh, the freshwater saltwater distinction in economics is now largely antiquated.
Huh.
Yeah, exactly. And so I can go to the saltwater and freshwater economics page and read about that. So already this terminology, I don't understand.
Yeah. So after going through those for a while, I found one that was recently published that was available on Libby. So I borrowed it and I could not pay attention to it. I had repeatedly, while trying my hardest to pay attention and stay on what was happening, completely just mentally wandered off into the sticks and had no freaking clue what was being talked about. So I just stopped trying with that one. So then Matthew and I went to Boulder and looked in a couple of bookstores there. And while I was there, I was like, oh, here's an economics books. Maybe I'll try that. And so I bought one called Narrative Economics, How Stories Go Viral and Drive Major Economic Events by Robert Shiller. And did I read that one? No, I most certainly did not. Why? Because it's a little bit long. And so finally, I remembered that like a while back, I had like seen this skinny little book that was like, seemed like a little basis of economics for like the busy person sort of thing. And I was like, oh, maybe I should read that someday. So it had been on sale. So I like in the sale bin at the bookstore. So I went ahead and bought it and I found it on my shelf and it was 200 pages and it was just an intro book to things. And so that's the one I read. So mostly I flailed is what I'm saying.
I will mention, I tried an audiobook to try to get through one that way. And I started the audiobook of Utopia for Realists, but just didn't vibe with the reader.
Yeah, the narrator.
So didn't finish that one.
Yeah, that's funny that you mentioned that because the book that I totally failed on was Slouching Towards Utopia. So a little bit of a utopia talk, huh?
So, Anna, that book that you failed to read, I just noticed something on the cover of it. Mm-hmm. And it says, what does it say on the cover? In the thing that looks like a sticker but isn't a sticker.
It says winner of the Nobel Prize.
So this reminded me about something.
I didn't
something.
Even notice that when I bought it, by the way.
This reminded me of something that I learned relatively recently, which is that there is a Nobel Prize for economics, but it's not a real Nobel Prize. It is actually the Nobel Memorial Prize in Economic Sciences, because of course they need to use the word sciences. And it is not one of the five original Nobel Prizes. It was created because like they were upset they weren't getting an award. It was an endowment from a Swedish bank to give awards in economics. And so some critics argue that the prestige of the prize in economics derives in part from its association with the Nobel Prizes, an association that has often been a source of controversy. Hmm. So
now we know.
There's an economics thing for you. Even if you have no interest in economics, now you know about literary and prize award controversy.
It's a fun fact, yeah.
Yeah.
Where's the Nobel Prize for library science?
No, I refuse to acknowledge us as science in any way. And like, I'm a data librarian.
Yeah, fair.
The way I found them is I did not go for a pure economics book at all, unlike some of you. I looked for... Mine were much more political science-y in nature. Political science. Oh, no. Oh, no. That's science as well.
It's science all the way down.
Mine were much more political in nature.
That actually came up also in the... what's that podcast? The books...
If Books Could Kill?
Yes. They actually talked about how one of them has a political science degree and one of them has a political philosophy degree.
Yeah, they should all be called political philosophy. And library philosophy. We can call it that. I just saw someone saying, why don't we teach an ethics course in library school? And I'm like, if you change it to library philosophy, maybe they'll teach an ethics course. Anyway, mine are politics books that have a focus that also talk about economics a lot and certain aspects of economics in certain places. And one of them I read because I recently saw a video of like African miners escaping a mine collapse in, I'm not sure exactly the country it was in, but somebody in the comments was like, oh, like if you want to find out more, you should read this book about the cobalt mining industry in the Congo. And so I was like, sure. Yeah. There's lots of numbers in it. Money. It's all about money. What did we read? Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. So I picked up Edible Economics, A Hungry Economist Explains the World by Ha-Jun Chang. This is a 2022 publication through Public Affairs Hachette. It's less than 200 pages, and it still took me the whole month, mostly because I was distracted for much of the month. And it's got short chapters. Short, snappy chapters. Each is structured around a food-based anecdote or story from history, and it leads to a discussion of a aspect of economics and economics theory and how it plays out in the world. The author says he intends this text to push back against the current dominance of neoclassical economic perspectives in the economics domain. He's a professor of economics at the SOAS University of London. So from that sphere, he said when he started studying, there were many more different perspectives and theories in the discourse. And so he's pushing back against that. The pros of this text is each chapter is very readable and engaging. Chang has a unique perspective growing up in South Korea, where foreign imports were very limited, and living through a blossoming food culture in Britain. And if you like food type stuff, there's that element to it. There is a strong perspective included in each of the chapters, but the conclusion seems to indicate he intended this not to be necessarily his own perspective for each one, but to demonstrate a variety of perspectives. And I don't know that that was necessarily clear when I was reading the book. And also, I think my other criticism of this would have been, this is definitely not A to Z explainer of economics or economics theory. It's very much a snapshot, and I wasn't super clear how well the whole thing tied together. Like, while I was reading it, it was interesting, it was engaging, I enjoyed it, but at the end I was like, I'm not sure how much I have learned about economics and economics theories and economic perspectives, since for each one he did not highlight which sort of economic perspective he wanted to be demonstrated within the chapter. So at the conclusion, he would say, you know, I used this one to demonstrate, you know, a feminist economic perspective. And I was like, well, that's interesting, but I would have liked to know that, like, at the beginning of the chapter or within the chapter, so I could use that to broaden my understanding. So maybe I didn't quite understand, like, what he was aiming for in each of the things, but I would have to either follow this up with a more broad overview of economics and economics perspectives, probably, or just seek out something else. I'm not mad about having read it because it was well written and interesting. I think he tends to, of the other books that he's written, and Economics, The User Guide, Bad Samaritans, and 23 Things They Don't Tell You About Capitalism, he does tend to publish things that are a little bit more aimed at the general audience in terms of books. He probably publishes more academic-y articles in other avenues, but that was my experience.
I started to read a book called Poisoned Wells, The Dirty Politics of African Oil by Nicholas Shaxson, which is from like 15 years ago, so it's a little bit dated at this point, but it talks a lot about the oil industry and the economics behind that and how it functions and where the money goes and everything in these different countries. Each chapter is a different country in Africa. And it talks about some really interesting stuff. And I got like 80 pages in when I realized I'd read this book before. It had been on my to-read list for like 6 years, but it turns out I actually read it a couple years before that and just hadn't taken it off the list. So I gave up that one. It's good. You know, I think though, if you want to read about like the history of the oil industry in like, it's not going to tell you like the brand newest stuff, but it is going to give you overviews of the historical oil industry in certain African countries. So instead, I started reading the other one, which was Cobalt Red, How the Blood of the Congo Powers Our Lives by Siddharth Kara, which is about the cobalt mining industry in the Congo in Africa. And you can tell kind of the type of book this is going to be because the author of King Leopold's Ghost has a quote on the cover, which is, you know, a book about how King Leopold was one of the worst people in history for killing people in the Congo like over 100 years ago. And if that's who's on your cover, like, you know, the book is not going to be happy. You know, like no one is getting the author of that book to give you a cover blurb if your book is about how great and successful Congo is, I don't think. I guess his quote also says, I hope policymakers on every continent will read this book, which also is not really promising. And so it goes and it talks about how cobalt, if you're not familiar with this, which I am not, is essential for basically every device, that an electronic device that we use all the time, everywhere. And it's just becoming more and more crucial because it's what is used in rechargeable batteries. And so our phones, our laptops, electric cars, all of the stuff are like, you know, wireless headphones are all using cobalt in them. And the biggest reserves and place to find cobalt in the world is the Congo. And so despite the industry is promising, oh, like we don't use, you know, child labor, we don't use, you know, blah, 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 we make sure that our supply lines are work well and all this stuff. He goes in and shows that no, they don't. They clearly don't care. This is how the people at the absolute bottom of this, how they work, how much money they're making. Honestly, it's sickening how little the people who are doing this horrifying, backbreaking, like health destroying work make so that we can have cell phones. It's just truly awful. And it's pretty upsetting as a book. It's like, I don't think it's one you can just read through all the way in one go, or at least I wouldn't advise it, because it's not great. And unfortunately I haven't finished it yet. So maybe the later chapters are like more positive, but what I've read so far is just like, yeah, it's like there's child labor. There's like horrible sexism in all this stuff. It just seems really bad. And it also talks about the history of how, like, you know, both Congo and Africa have just been used and abused by colonial powers for, like, you know, centuries at this point, and how our economies are based on stealing from Africa, really what it comes down to. But there's also stuff that talks about, like, the Belt and Loop thing from the Chinese government that it does in Africa, of like, you know, building roads and everything for a political benefit and all this other stuff. So I think it's really interesting. It is like brand new. It came out this year, the book. So for once, cutting edge of new books. Very rare that this happens on this podcast, but this just came out very recently, and I think it's worth reading. I think it's worth checking out. I haven't finished it, but I intend to finish it. Is that enough about the economy? I don't know. What do you all think?
I was gonna make kind of a not economy related anecdote.
Capitalism is bad.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. I led a tour of my library for an event with a bunch of teens and tweens the other night. And there was one really rad 10-year-old who I was talking about how the library has solar panels now and we make some of our own electricity. And they like their face just fell and they were like, they're like, aren't solar panels made by slaves? So there was some sort of back and forth in the group about that for a bit. And like, I ended up saying like, you know, there's lots of like labor and working conditions issues about a lot of the things that we use every day. So thank you so much for bringing that up. Yeah, it's tough to live in the world.
Anna was saying the other day when she saw me reading like anti-work and late stage capitalism posts on Reddit, if that counted as reading about economics. And I'm like, I guess so.
We forgot to try and define economics.
Nope.
No.
It is reflected sound of underground spirits. Economics.
Wow. Wow.
And I definitely did not read anything about economics.
Discworld joke by Terry Pratchett, but it stayed in my mind for a very long time. So yes, reflected sound of underground spirits. I don't know if a gnome's an underground spirit, but you know, whatever.
Wow. I mean, we discussed whether it's a philosophy or a science, so that was pretty close to trying to define it. We had a discussion of what it is.
Yeah, we did. We did. Right away. Immediately.
Spreadsheets.
It's just short. Yeah.
Spreadsheets.
Though I will say this is one where, like, I feel like there's some, for nonfiction topics, there's some that I read for the show where I was like, I have enough background in this that I can read whatever. Or, you know, for like, when we did gender studies, I was like, the world's my oyster. I have a ton of background in this. There's some stuff where I'm like, I have enough understanding of this, like sports, for example, or it's like, I know enough about sports that I can pick some different things and find something I enjoy. For economics, I was truly like, I do not have enough base knowledge to like, to pick a book that seems interesting and feel confident that I will understand what's happening in it. Like, yeah, I just really needed a basic, something very basic.
Yeah. One of the things I told Matthew about picking and reading a book for this month is that when I am reading these books, I can't tell if I'm supposed to be, or if I would be, if I should be, if my view in the world would make me angry at this person or not. Like, I can't tell if I should be angry at this person or not. Should I agree with them? Should I disagree with them? What's being said right now? I can't tell.
You should be angry at somebody, at least. I think all economics books, you should be angry at somebody.
Yeah, fair.
So I'll talk about what I read if we're ready to move on. I mentioned that I looked up a lot of intro books, a lot of like super basic books. The book that I ended up picking and reading is Communism for Kids. This is by Binny Adamsack. I may be mispronouncing. That is a German author. This was in translation, so translated by Jacob Blumenfeld and Sophie Lewis, written in 2014, translated in 2017. And it is the framing device is that it is a book for children explaining communism and related concepts. But it is really a book for adults using a framing device and written in a sort of fairy tale way. The chapters are like, what is communism? What is capitalism? What is the market? What is a crisis? And then the sort of second section is what is to be done and goes through different kinds of, you know, attempts at communism to see if this is communism or not. It's really more about figuring out what isn't communism than I feel like giving a pretty clear, straightforward definition of it. Which, you know, it was written by a philosopher. That's kind of the point, is that it is something that we have to continually engage with in order to make it work and be ethical. But, you know, for kids.
Is you saying what is to be done a reference to the thing that Lenin wrote?
I don't know. That's what the name of the section is.
Okay, it almost certainly is then, I would say. I wasn't sure if you were quoting it or if it was that was just what you had said. So
yeah, so it's sort of these fairy tale chapters where the people work at the factory and they're not happy. And so they try to get rid of the bosses and they put all their money in this pot called the state. And at the end of each of these like trial and error sessions, they go, no, 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 this isn't communism. And that was kind of my favorite part, because I can actually imagine like reading that to a child and having the child start echoing back like, no, 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 this isn't communism. Then there is a epilogue that is in a more adult philosophical writing style, and is like, pretty densely like is referencing a lot of philosophers. Derrida and Foucault and very much a different vein. I feel like I had some issues with it similar to what you experienced, Megan, where there was like this like example to explain a concept. And then it wasn't until afterwards that they're like, this was the concept that I was demonstrating, where I like in the epilogue, you know, she lists these questions and then like, you know, do we want, is communism, you know, such and such, as we saw in trial number 3. And I was like, oh, that's not how I interpreted that at all. I mean, yeah, if you want something very like light and fun about communism, you may enjoy Communism for Kids. You will not come away with any hard and fast answers, but that's kind of the point, I think. And it's also, I'd be interested to know, since this was written in 2014, I feel like the epilogue ends on this very hopeful note, and references like it's coming out like right after like the Arab Spring and like a number of social movements globally trying to envision a better world. And I do wonder how much in the epilogue would be different. In a sort of post COVID world. Yeah, that was Communism for Kids.
Well, I have kind of a transition from that one, because the book that I read is called Talking to My Daughter About the Economy, or How Capitalism Works and How It Fails.
How old is the daughter?
I think at one point the age is referenced as having been 4 in 2008, and the book was written in 2013.
So 9?
Ish, yeah.
8 to 10 years old.
Yeah.
Math, baby.
No, economics.
Not all math is economic.
This is written by Yanis Varoufakis. I'm probably pronouncing that right. I should have looked it up. Especially because he's a like politician and economist that's actually fairly well known. I even recognized his face a little bit because he was on the news a whole bunch around the Greek, like when Greece sort of had its like financial meltdown.
He just looks like a bald white man, Anna.
He does. Mostly. Yeah. So he's a former finance minister of Greece and, has served as an economist and politician in Greece. This was originally written in Greek 2013, as I mentioned, and then translated into English in 2017. The book is not written for like a 9-year-old exactly, but it is written like to be a fairly simple and approachable breakdown. He very intentionally talks at the beginning about like, I'm not going to use this kind of jargon that's common. I'm not even going to say capitalism, because I think it comes loaded with too many other meanings, concepts, and emotions around it. And I think that those get in the way of us understanding what we're talking about. And then just kind of proceeds to like Jam and Megan noted, lots of anecdotes that illustrate concepts. But usually I was following those anecdotes quite well. They were followed very closely by like exact explanations of how he's applying them and what they meant, or what he meant by them anyways. And there are a lot of them. There's also no citations and no end notes or anything else in here as opposed to like...
Science.
Yeah. Well, this is like as opposed to the other economics books I've touched, which are like loaded with those things, right? So, and he actually talked about how this is like different from any other economics book he's written. He just sat down to write what, you know, what he's accumulated in his understanding of this over the years in a way that he thought would be approachable for his young daughter.
Economics as vibes.
Yeah. So what he is just doing is describing, you know, what is a surplus? How does this fit into a market system? How does control of that end up being created? How does religion and the state fit into the control of the surplus? And like all these kinds of things. And then the change, what changed, to create a market system, and how did that happen? What were kind of the pieces along there? It's definitely wildly incomplete in terms of explaining all of that. Like, I'm not sure that the history or anthropology aspects of it are in any way the strength of this book. The strength of this book is using those to try to identify how these concepts function in our world. And then what he does is he brings it up to kind of current times and talks about, like, what does this mean in terms of our relationship to the environment? What does this mean in terms of our relationship to automation and machinery? And what are some of the major issues there? Without really having, like, well, he has somewhat of his answer. His answer is, like, some people will say that you have to make markets out of everything. Just keep making it all markets and all commodities. And he says, you just can't. You absolutely can't. It's not going to function. What you have to do is make democracy out of everything. You're just going to have to democratize everything. So everybody gets an equal voice. But does he explain how in the world that would work or we would ever make that happen? I don't know. Not really. Like he's kind of leaving it open and saying like he frames it as if it's to his daughter, but. You know, saying you'll have to find your way in this and the means by which you want to approach dealing with these challenges. My proposal is you got to democratize everything, but you'd have to figure out how to do that. So good luck. But, you know, at least I didn't like walk away from it wanting to burn him down, which I think is a common reaction to a lot of my readings of economists. So, you know, there's that. So yeah, it was a fast read. I do feel like I at least have a sense of like how people who spend a lot of time actually thinking that they're talking about the economy, like what some of those key components are. But he also does talk about like people don't know what they're talking about when they talk about the economy or economics. And in terms of people, he's including every economist. He's like, they're just bullshitting. They don't know anything. It's all black magic and wibbly wobbly, like wave your fingers at stuff. Nobody knows what they're talking about. So that's kind of entertaining for him to be like, yeah, yeah, economists, it's just bullshitters.
There was a metaphor in my book I particularly liked where she compared, I think it was capitalism specifically, but to a Ouija board, where everybody is moving the glass and they're like, oh, the forces of economics are making things happen and we have to listen to them. And
yeah, totally.
And it's like, no, you're doing it.
The invisible hand of the market. Oh, and inflation. Mm-hmm. Inflation just happens, right? It's just a natural force. Definitely. Definitely not greedy people wanting to make more money. Definitely. You know, frogs and gorillas and chinchillas all have to deal with inflation as well in their markets.
What's a chinchilla market look like?
I don't know what a chinchilla looks like, Anna.
Okay, fair.
It's like a hamster?
Ish.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it was the invisible hand of the market that as soon as I finished reading my book, I looked on Instagram and then it, you know how there's so many more suggested posts than just people that you follow on the feed now. And the next one up was somebody who was like, why economists are wrong. Here's my economics degree. Let me tell you why they're wrong.
I will send you a link and link in the show notes, a link about from The Verge about social media and why it ends up the way it does, which I thought was interesting, which also can tie into economics because it's all about how they make money.
Yeah.
And also kind of why nobody is willing to pay for Twitter.
Also on Instagram, you can snooze the suggested posts for 30 days. Yeah. In the corner, if you like to do the drop down, you can snooze all suggested posts for 30 days. And just every 30 days, I snooze all suggested posts until they take that option away.
So what are the appeal factors of reading about the economy and economics?
So one of the points that is made in my book is that economics in the world that we live in currently is basically making all the big decisions in our lives. So you kind of ought to know something about it and read on it. So I feel like that does come up where we feel obligated to, but I also feel for some people it makes them feel empowered if they are reading about it, that somehow that they will have more power to structure their lives in terms of the critical economic aspects and decisions and things going on around them if they understand more and read more of these materials.
Some people just like being angry, I guess. That's also a reason to read economics books.
Literally, my partner has read an economics book for that exact reason. He's done a hate read of an economics book. I mean, we are not all of us, but I feel like there was perhaps listeners who came hoping we were going to read a bunch of like how to invest and how to manage your business and how to get rich books.
Those are finance books in my mind.
Personal finance, for the most part.
I guess. I suppose. There's probably some crossover in the book list, but and in general, but we all went on a more capitalist, critical bent, and so I'm curious what the appeal of reading that kind of economics book is.
I'm sure our listeners are very shocked that we chose these books, Jam. Big left turn for us in more ways than one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I actually usually, in terms of that, I tend to read more about labor from that perspective than, say, economics. But of course, obviously, the entwined, like, right? Like, we are talking about the same thing, but not talking about the same thing, but talking about the same thing in there. So just a different perspective of it. I also would say I tend to read from the more social sciences side of that, which maybe reflects the way that I conceive of economics as a social science, not as a science. But I'm not an economist, so I have no like stated need for it to be perceived as a science. So
there's a socialist sciences joke to be made in there as well somewhere.
That I have read quite a few personal finance type books, which I always find horribly depressing.
Yeah. That's why I don't read them.
They are, like, on an individual level, the kind of things you could control, whereas the economics books that we have all talked about are more like, if you were a policy wonk, perhaps you would be more interested in the macroeconomics because you're thinking on the scale of government policies. And so if you're interested in pushing policy and pushing like what your municipality decisions are making or what your local government decisions are making or what the national government decisions are making, you want to be able to advocate for solutions that make your lived existence better on a scale that is grander than just like whether or not you have a savings account and are, you know, investing in areas that support your values, if that's even possible. I like, that's one of the depressing things that I encounter all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that too, but I still do think that some people feel empowered by reading about the large scale aspects. Even if they can't push them, they feel empowered by knowing that they exist or feeling like they understand how they exist. Even if that's an artificial understanding, even if that feeling isn't real, they feel empowered by it.
Yeah. I don't mean to say that you can't make changes, just that you have to understand how policy is part of what you'd need to push to make changes in, as opposed to like where you open an account or something like that. Like the scale of it is different. You're going to have to make community action part of that, which is not part of the economics books that we've looked at just so much as macro versus micro.
One of the points I brought up earlier that the book I read made was that essentially this is the theology, like capitalism of is the theology of today. Mm. So it's basically sort of reading your religion.
Yeah, the belief that it will work and everything.
Mm-hmm. Faith, like belief and faith and various ways to get at that. He talked a little bit towards the very end, just very briefly about like they keep just if the mythology, which would be like a model or a theory, an economics model or theory, doesn't end up panning out in reality, they just make a new model or theory and just reapply and reapply and reapply new ones. And that's just a version of like, making new making new predictions. He uses the oracles as the way of talking about this and the need of the community to continue to believe that these oracles are going to ultimately like be an important aspect of, you know what I mean, by like part of their theology, part of their understanding of how the world, you know, stays coherent.
Yeah. Or you just didn't perform the ritual correctly.
Right.
And if you had followed the inputs perfectly, you would have obtained the output that was desired.
Exactly. I think everybody just got quite depressed.
What a fun Saturday night we're having.
Oh, boy.
So this was definitely an interesting experience. I'm on the fence about whether I'll read another of the ones that I still have out from the library in terms of would I read this genre again. It feels like one of those things where maybe I will have to space it out.
Yeah, it's actually an interesting point. I read this. I owned the book that I read because I bought it, you know, it's a sale item a while back. And I had this thought. I'm like, yay, I've got another book I can just kind of get out of the house that I have read out of, you know, the many stacks that I have around. And then I had this immediate afterthought of like, well, maybe this is an important topic and I don't have much on it and I should just have something around that I can refer to or something. And then I was like, no, but will I ever read this again? No, I sure won't. And then I was like, but you know, as a responsible adult, I need to understand the economy. Like I can feel myself like having this back and forth and being like, dang.
Yeah, so time to eat some candy and play video games is what you're saying.
Yes, that's totally what I'm saying. He's so great to sit on the couch and play video games and eat candy right now.
Responsible adult, no. The other route.
Yeah. Any last words?
I would be curious if our listeners have any suggestions for us. If they have read economics books that they think that we would appreciate reading. So let us know. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Club for Masochists. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you like the show, subscribe so you never miss an episode, and consider giving us a positive rating and or review. And if you've already done that, thank you very much.
For all our URLs and social media accounts, the 4 in our name is a numeral. You can go to our website at bookclub4m.com, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/bookclub4m, and find us on Instagram at bookclub4m. Our email address is bookclub4m@gmail.com.
We're still on Twitter, but are we still on Twitter?
Yeah, debatable.
On our website, you can find show notes that will provide links to the things we've mentioned, social media info for everyone who appeared on this episode, and our genre-based book lists of titles by authors of color.
I believe at least 2 of those social media links are now to Mastodon.
Great. You can suggest a genre or title for us to read or request a recommendation from us. We have a form you can fill out on our website, bookclub4m.com. No promises on reading your specific suggestion, but if you ask for a recommendation, we will give you one.
I think I actually checked out a book recommendation from a listener today. So it does happen occasionally.
Nice.
All opinions are our own and do not reflect our places of employment, if they exist.
Our theme music is To Arrakis by Dark Sun from the Free Music Archive.
New episodes are the 1st and 3rd Tuesday of every month.
Join us again on Tuesday, May 16th, when we'll be talking about whether or not we would read the genres we've covered on this show again.
Then, on Tuesday, June 6th, we'll be discussing the genre of fantasy. Every type of fantasy. Very broad. We needed something to recover from economics.
I got so many fantasy books checked out.
Not that we goosed the non-algorithm, the random rhythm. What do I want to say here? Goose the dice?
It was a happy accident.
Yes. We didn't cheat.
We didn't cheat. That's what I'm saying.
If we had gotten something similar, though, we would have probably re-rolled.
If we got economic romance or something.
I was just going to say economic fiction. But yeah, economic romance, even worse.
Absolutely. That's kind of there is a whole millionaire-billionaire romance.
Oh, you're right. You're so right.
Yeah.
Oh.
And we don't have it on our list, I don't think. Matthew's double-checking.
It might be on the list.
Could be.
What is that subgenre, though? Just, rich person romance? High finance romance? White collar romance? If it doesn't have a name yet,
We just call it, millionaires or something.
Yeah, it's not there. I'll add it.
Wealth. Wealth romance.
White collar romance does not bring up results. Oh, although there's a white collar, blue collar pairing in romance. A book list on Goodreads.
I need to stop eating candy.
Meanwhile, Jim is carefully realigning their camera so that Heidi, the cat, is visible.
Make sure Heidi's on screen.
Carefully realigning their cat, yes.
This is a secret behind the scenes.
You know, I guess maybe we should turn it into a video podcast, and then we'll gain so much popularity because they'll be like, oh, there's a cat, and everyone will want to watch
it. That's true.
Instead of us on the video screens, we each need to have a cat.
Yep.
Displayed.
Yep, totally.
But we can still talk in the background, but all you can see is delightful kitties.
Yeah.
I feel like that would be a hit.
I agree. I think that would be a hit.
That's not happening because I'm not editing video.
Y'all need to get some cats. leave name ideas for Megan and Matthew and Anna's future cats.
Heidi, come on. You don't have to yell.
But food, 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 food.
Well, she wants to sit on me, and she will just yell for a while.
Pre-sitting.
Until she feels confident that she is welcome to sit on me.
I guess that's
your
consent.
Cat has, confidence issues.
She does. Yes, absolutely.
Proceed. Pay no attention to the man looking at Wikipedia. Leave your comments below. Rate, and subscribe.